Racing Riot is sponsored by Members Club Ultimate, the Racing Post's premium service. As a listener of the show, you can get an exclusive discount. Please use the code RIOT20 and you'll pay just £19.95 per month for your first 3 months. Members Club Ultimate gives you access to the digital newspaper, full video replays from British and Irish racing, expert tipping from our pros, and exclusive news and interviews, plus insight and analysis, and so much more to ensure you are up to date with the industry. Click on subscribe, select Get Ultimate Monthly, and enter all your info, and then enter discount code RIOT20. That's RIOT20. Hello and welcome back to the Racing Riot podcast. I'm joined by Charlie Post, my co-host every single time. Charlie, how are you doing?
Really good, Josh. Exciting week ahead. We're hopefully moving into crowds being back at the race courses, which is fantastic news.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking to special guest Daryl Jacob and another special guest, Callum Bewley, who rides iRight in the big race at Newbury on Saturday. We're also going to be touching on Holly Doyle, Rishi Passat and crowds back at the races.
But first things first.
What's that?
Big news for the podcast. My co-host has been nominated for the HWPA Derby Awards Emerging Talent. Congratulations, mate. That's fantastic.
Thank you very much. I was very happy with that. And it's a pleasure to be among the nominees.
Tom Kirbin on, pay rise from the Racing Post if you win or not.
I suppose it has to come with it, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, never mind. Maybe the Racing Post will be left behind. I mean, you'll be onto bigger and better things.
Did you see the jumper the other day, the personalised one?
I didn't.
Moving up in the world. The coat on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, I did. I mean, you walked in the door and it, Joshua Stacey Racing. I said, what does that even mean?
I think I'm going to start up my own training facility or something. Just in my garden with no gallop.
Fantastic.
I mean, feel like you need that. I thought, why not? I'm sick of going around to trainers and seeing Ollie Murphy racing jackets and Fergal O'Brien racing jackets. And I thought, even though I'm not a trainer, why not get one?
So you're going to set up with your own horse from your mum's garden. It's going to be like a Warwickshire version of Seabiscuit, really.
Yeah, I think that's what I was going for anyway.
Fantastic.
A few people wanted to buy one.
Well, maybe this is the whole thing, merchandising, you know, as in there's going to be...
Racing Lactive. I'm not sure they want Joshua Stacey Racing.
Well, someone obviously does.
Yeah, no, to be fair, you've got to give the people what they want.
100%.
Shall we give them Daryl Jacob on the line?
I think we better.
I think we need to stop waffling. Introducing the first guest. He was victorious in the Betfair Chase last weekend at Haydock on Bristow Demai. So many amazing pictures from that. Daryl Jacob. Daryl, how are you first and foremost?
Very good, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Very good.
And you are on the way back from Lingfield, am I right?
Yeah, on the way back from Lingfield, yeah. So, unfortunately, no joy today, but... tomorrow's a new day. Turn over the page. It's a new chapter.
No joy today, but you had a great, great Saturday last week. Bristol Demai winning the Betfair Chase. How did that mean to you? You were very emotional after the race.
Yeah. Look, it was very, very special. I mean, for any horse to win three Betfair Chases are very, very special. It's a bit of history, isn't it? Only two other horses have done it before us, and you know, it's as everyone knows, it's obviously been. A rough time for a lot of people, and like you say, if you know, if he can bring a little bit of light to a small part of people's days, it's amazing. And the reaction that we got to Bristol winning the Betfair Chase for a third time was fantastic. You know,
what is it about Haydock and cutting the ground that he loves so much?
I just think it's a flat left-handed track. He just seems very, very comfortable there. And, you know, he just seems to get into a really nice rhythm around there. There are nice fences around there for him. And especially when it's, you know, when it's soft ground like that, it's, you know, they take a little bit more jumping. But I think it's just generally it's the rhythm that he seems to get into it around there.
Just talking, a touch on that. I mean, the rhythm on Saturday was unbelievably good. I mean, the race couldn't have really played out any better for you, could it?
No, look, it was only a small field. That, you know, there was a lot of planning, a lot of thought went into the race, and how we'd like to, you know, to try and beat, you know, obviously Glandazovo lost the translation and stuff like that. So, but you know, for the whole race in itself, and you know, I couldn't have worked it out to happen any better, and especially with the rain coming, you know, just before racing and stuff like that, kind of made the ground softer and looser, and you know, they're the conditions he thrives on.
Nigel came out the race after and said that he could go to Aintree. Now, you've got great experience in the Grand National with Greys. Do you think he's up there, and do you think he's got the quality to win one?
You know, I'd love it. It'd be a real dream, really. You know, Simon and Isaac have always wanted to you know, that's one of their lists that they'd love to tick off. If you were to ask them, you know, what race they'd like to win the most, it'd be the Grand National. And you know, I'd love to do it for them if we got a chance. I'd love to, you know, it'd be by far, if we could win a Grand National, it'd be the best day of my career that I've ever had. You know,
just going back to what you just made your comments about the Betfair on Saturday, just to give some insight to our listeners, you said that there was only a small field, but there was a real plan in place. I just wondered, could you give us some sort of insight into what your thoughts were re-beating Lost in Translation and Klander's Obo? Like, what were your plans going out there?
Well, obviously, you know, Klander's Obo, he's been, you know, he's looked very, very good when he's been on the bridle, and he's, you know, his sort of best form before Saturday was on better ground, right on the track, and he's always seemed to come there too. You know, he's always pretty much been the last horse to come off the bridle, and he's, you know, he's won his races from that. Last in Translations, obviously, he's got a bit, you know, on good ground, he's got a bit more speed, and he stays. So I knew at the ground coming up the way it was coming up, you know, I knew I had to get number one if it was Klander's Obo that was tracking me. The only way I could get him beaten was to get into a bit of a dogfight with him, and that's how it panned out. You know, got into it. It was a tough last furlong, and like you say, you know, my lad showed a lot of resolute, and you know, he really stuck his head down and he galloped to the line.
I'm sure Paul Nicholls would be delighted with how Klander's Obo came out of the race ahead of the King George. Just for listeners that wouldn't know, do you ever look at previous runnings of the Betfair Chase? I know Lost in Translation, unfortunately, pipped you to it last year. Did you look at that and see how you could implement different things in that race into this year, or was it sort of a complete blank slate?
No, because obviously I have obviously watched it, but obviously, as it's been well documented, Bristol Dumay had a terrible last 2 weeks in preparation up into the Betfair Chases, in the fact that he was swimming for 2 weeks beforehand. So his preparation for the Betfair Chase was far from ideal last year. And we, you know, we had to try and ride a different sort of race last year for him to try and hopefully get home. And look, it didn't work. He blew up going down to the last, and he was tired after the last. And, you know, like you say, if you look at last year's race compared to this year's race, I sat on a much fitter, a much hardier type of horses and ready to go and go to war this year, whereas last year, if you looked at him, you know, he just wasn't as fit, and he just wasn't as ready for up for it mentally as what he was this year. So they were two totally different races, but you know, we done the best with the circumstances that we were dealt with last year in the Betfair Chase, and I thought he you know, what he did last year showed real heart, real determination, you know, to get beaten a length and a half by Lost in Translation on ground that he relishes, that probably wasn't in our favour. You know, to be only beaten a length and a half, you know, gave me a lot of confidence going into this year. I knew Bristol and May was going to be a lot fitter, a lot straighter, you know, and up for a war this year going into the race.
He's an absolute warrior of a horse, isn't he? And who's to say that he can't come back and win a fourth Betfair Chase next year?
A real public horse.
Massively. And Daryl and him are a partnership made in heaven. And from one big race winning Saturday and a great partnership to another moving forward this weekend, So Royale, Newcastle, fighting fifth hurdle. What's your thoughts on that, Daryl?
Look, I can't wait to ride him. You know, usually this time of the year, the ground up in Newcastle is heavy, soft anyway, and that would be suit with him. And you know, obviously, Scoriel's form since he's come back has been immaculate. He won the Welsh Champion Hurdle Handicap. You know, he romped home and that, and he was very, very impressive with me in the lead hurdle at Wincanton on good ground. And you know, when you know, we obviously have got Kildisart in the Ladbroke Chase on Saturday as well, so I had to make a decision on the two. But I just couldn't turn down this opportunity to ride Scoriel in a Grade One, taking on Epitant. It's our first run of the year. We've had two, so we're very fit, very, very well, very fresh. And you know, I'm really looking forward to the challenge.
I know it shouldn't, but does sentiment come into it a bit because of the partnership you have with So Royale, or is this purely you think So Royale has a better chance than Kildisart?
Look, Kildisart's got a great chance, and you know, I think that the NSE or the Ladbroke, I think it's a very open type of race. I think there's definitely eight horses, nine horses that potentially could win the race. So look, it's not it's no, as in Gold Cup kind of standout years, like with the likes of Demon, What a Friend, Diamond Harry, you know, all of them good horses that we've seen in before in the Hennessy. It's not that type of race, but it's a very, very competitive race. But, you know, Scoriel has been a wonderful horse for my career since I joined Simon and Isaac. I've won, I think, 4 grade ones on him before in the past. And, you know, realistically, you know, he's obviously not getting any younger, but I think if he's going to win a grade one, you know, especially this year, I think it's going to be his opportunity to do it.
Completely agreed. Now, just you've given insight the fact that you think about the job for sure. I just wondered, you're taking on a champion hurdle winner in Epiton. What are the chinks in her armour, do you feel, that you're hoping to exploit at the weekend?
Look, at this time last year, she was a handicapper, wasn't she? And then she obviously went on and won the Christmas hurdle at Kempton. We had Fuser Raffles in the race, and he obviously disappointed. And she was second or third favourite behind him that day. And obviously she came out and she won, you know, she won the champion hurdle, you know, and unfortunately, you know, the form of the champion hurdle is decent enough form. But, you know, this time last year she was running in a handicap, you know, and I think it's going to be a different opposition on Saturday, where you're taking on a grade one horse that's been there for, you know, for the last 5 or 6 years. I'm fit, I'm well, I'm in the form of my life. And, you know, like you say, she's had... she hasn't had a run. I know she's been away to Newbury for a gallop, but, you know, it's, as you know, Charlie, yourself, you've ridden races, you can't be having that race fitness on your side. And hopefully, like you say, if there's ever going to be a chance or ever going to be a time that I'm going to be here, I think it's going to be Saturday, because the conditions are very much in my favour. So the fact that I think Scoriel's a better horse going left-handed. He's very, very good on this sort of good ground. And he's very, very good coming off a fast pace as well, which you're going to get on Saturday as well, with two front runners in the race. So, like you say, there's so much in my favour for Saturday to beat her. If I can't beat her, look, at, I might beat her, but for sure I'll go down there. We'll go there fighting.
He's been over fences and he's been over hurdles over the last couple of years. If he was to win on Saturday, do you think the route then would be firmly champion hurdle, or do you think that he could still go over fences given the open division of the champion chase?
Look, you could switch him back. If he won on Saturday over hurdles, you could run him on Sunday over fences, and it would make a difference. He's a very fast, quick, sharp jumper, and like you say, you know, at the moment, obviously, we're going to have a look at the champion hurdle picture. But if the champion pace picture opened up, if the champion chase, if the champion chase picture opened up again, you know, he'll be right there, bang, ready for it as well. So there's no definite game plan for him, but like I say, whichever looks the more likely, the easier division, we'll have a crack at that.
You get me a flat white while you're there as well.
Gavin's getting the coffees, gentlemen.
Oh, actually, crikey.
He's actually making me get the coffees.
I was going to say, I can't imagine Gavin Sheehan parting with the cash that easy. No way.
Gavin's always tight.
And of course, like you, I mean, you're at the sort of senior stage of your career, but you seem more.
All right, Charlie.
I know, but we've got to be honest. But you seem more content than ever. You know, as in, I feel like the role that you have there is a great job, and it must give you lots of security. And through it, you know, you picking up lovely spares. Pim at the weekend in the rehearsal chase. What do you think about him?
Yeah, look, he obviously he beat me on If the Cat Fits around Sandown the last time. You know, and he looked impressive that day. Look, Pim's a very, very good horse, and some of his form in novice chases and stuff like that has been top class. He beat one of Kim Bailey's, that Imperial, I can't pronounce how you say Auras or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
He beat him. His form is very, very strong. He beat me on If the Cat Fits at Sandown the last time. I schooled him this morning. He's in great form, and no, like I say, I'm just very lucky. I've got Simon and Isaac and Anthony. They're wonderful people to ride for. They take a lot of pride. They take a lot of passion in the horses. And, you know, we want the best for the horses. And, you know, from that point of view, it gives me a lot of confidence that I can go out there and I can do the best thing by the horses. And if it's not happening on the day, I look after the horses for the next day. And also that, you know, some of the trainers that we've got horses with before, I seem to be giving me a few spare rides and nice spare rides. And like you say, it's, you know, I'm just very, very happy. And I'd like to say I'm very, very lucky. And, you know, I want to enjoy, you know, as you say, I'm one of the senior members in the weigh room now. And, you know, I want to enjoy the last, you know, whatever years you've got riding it. I want to really enjoy them.
Really do hope you do enjoy those years. And we hope you have a great weekend and have plenty of winners at Newcastle on Saturday. Thank you very much for speaking to us, Daryl. And best of luck for the weekend.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a million.
Great to speak to Daryl. He touched on Kuldazat in the Ladbrokes Trophy, and that moves us on to our next guest. He rides iWrite. Let's speak to the man himself, Callum Bewley, ahead of a big weekend. Callum, first and foremost, I hope you're well and moving on to the weekend. It's a huge ride for you. What does it mean to have such a high-profile ride in such a high-profile race?
No, it's a great privilege to get the opportunity to go down to Newbury. It's a cracking race to get the chance to ride in, and to have a live chance as well, it means an awful lot.
He's he's a horse that ticks the sort of right boxes for the race, being a second season chasing, not, you know, and his progress through this autumn seems to have gone fantastically well. You know, second to Nutswell over 2 mile at Kelso, and then a lovely third in the Charlie Hall behind Surname. You must be very, very happy with the way things have gone for him leading up to the race.
Definitely. I mean, you know, we started this season, we went to Kelso, 2 mile chase on Kelso, and like you say, we bumped into Nutswell, and 2 miles now, you know, you could do with a bit further, but it was the perfect prep race to get us going. And you know, I think it taught him a lot as well, you know, just with his jumping in general. It sharpened him up, like you say, and he's not had that many starts coming into this season, and 2 mile, he had to be quick, you know, and he had to learn fast. And he ran a cracker for me that day, you know, and he definitely sharpened him up for the Charlie Hall, and, you know, he showed a lot of people what he can do.
How long has this race been in mind?
I don't know. I mean, I know it's a race that the owners have always, you know, been quite keen to have a go at, but I think, you know, in terms of, you know, Harriet, she's always just let the horse tell us, you know. I mean, we've never kind of, you know, made main targets as such. We just kind of set off with Kelso in mind, with, you know, coming along to the Charlie Hall, and I suppose after that it's been in the mind and on the plan for a while. But you know yourself, plans can always change, and I suppose we're just very lucky that things have, you know, went the way they have, and touch wood, the horse has come into this race, and fingers crossed all is well for Saturday, you know.
Do you think he's improving from last year? Does he give you a better feel now than he did before?
Most definitely.
That's what backers want to hear.
For me, as a novice, he's very forward-going kind of horse, like you've seen that yourself. I think as a novice, over hurdles especially, he was one of them. He just wanted to rock and roll. He wasn't worried about what was in front of him. He's always been well able to jump and well able to do his job. It just took him one or two runs to get under his belt till the penny dropped, you know what I mean? And once it did, then you can start stepping him up and trip. And I mean, you know, he's done nothing wrong. No, this season again from last season. I mean, you know, we went to Doncaster, and, you know, it was one of them silly mistakes. Probably my fault more than anything. And then we went to Newcastle in a 200 event, which he was, you know, everything went to plan that day. But two runners, he's probably not learned as much as he would if there were a bigger field. And then we went to the RSA. So, you know, he's had to learn quick. And I mean, for me this season, he's a different horse again.
Fantastic. And we had Daryl Jacob on before, and we were talking about preparation to before big race rides. I mean, you, like myself, high profile rides don't come around all that often when I, like, and so this is a big moment. I just wondered, two things. Have you ridden at Newbury before?
Never ridden, no.
And so what sort of homework have you done to try and prepare yourself for that? I mean, much as that Newbury's a lovely flat galloping track, but have you watched plenty of replays and stuff?
Loads. Yeah. Plenty. I mean, like, I'd watch a lot of racing anyway when I can, replays, etc. Plenty of races around Newbury, you know. Not only just looking back at the Hennessy, but, you know, numerous races whether it be 2 mile chase. I just look at a lot of racing. So no, look, I've watched plenty of races, and of course we've all watched Denman win around there a few times, and you know, yeah, no, we've looked plenty anyway.
Well, it's a race that, I mean, can be, what I mean, do you think you'll make the running on Saturday?
My hands aren't tied, you know, I'll just be good and positive on him. And look, if he's in front over the first couple, well, he's in front. He doesn't have to make the running, you know. I'll just sit where he's comfortable and get him into a rhythm, you know.
And looking forward, what would a win in the Ladbrokes Trophy at the weekend do to the career of Callum Bewley?
Everything. Yeah, it would be brilliant. It would be brilliant. I mean, not only me, it'd be great for Harry Graham, the team at home, and Jeff and Elspeth Arden as well. You know, like, they put a lot of money into the game, and they've got some nice horses, and it would be nice to, you know, repay them with something like this, you know.
Callum, we wish you all the best. Thank you very much for speaking to us, and best of luck on Saturday.
Thank you very much. Cheers, mate.
Two fantastic guests, and I know I speak for both of us when I say we wish Callum Bewley the best of luck at the weekend. What a day it would be for that young man. And we've had two riders on really today at either end of the spectrum. Daryl Jacob, who's been there and done it all, and Callum Bewley trying to make his way in the game. And like I say, both of them have huge days on Saturday, and we wish them the best of luck. Another rider that has had an unbelievable season is Holly Doyle, and recently crowned the Sunday Times Sportswoman of the Year, which I believe is voted for by fellow athletes. What an incredible accolade, Josh.
For racing to have, not only, she's a role model to any girl or woman trying to get into the sport, but she flies the flag for racing. What a year she's had. She had a five-timer at Windsor. Champions Day was just phenomenal for her and her boyfriend, Tom Marquand. And it's really special for racing to have someone that's leading the line in the sports industry, not just the racing industry.
I think that's the point, isn't it? You know, I mean, we've had her on the podcast before, a very modest athlete, but it's fantastic for racing now and again to breach the divide into the mainstream. And like I say, when you look at the people that have won this award in the past, she's up there with some real global superstars.
Jessica Ennis.
Exactly. I think Dame Kelly Holmes and people like that. It's an unbelievable accolade, and it's brilliant for racing, like I say, to get these sort of pieces of recognition every now and again that go beyond just the small world that we live in.
We've had Tom on, and we've had and Holly on, and I refuse to believe that on a great night like that, especially at Champions Day, Tom just said they went home, had a meal at a restaurant. Surely they've got to be having parties back at home.
I would hope now. I mean, I know we're in a very sort of sterile era of professionalism and everything like that, but if Holly Doyle and Tom Marquand aren't going to have a huge party once all this COVID-19 stuff is over during the off-season, something's gone very wrong.
I think they'd be too professional.
I do worry that in sport now, we've almost forgotten the desire from the competitors to celebrate as well and actually live a little, you know, and they deserve it more than any. I mean, they're a shining example of how professional athletes should be, the pair of them. And you know, I can't imagine it's a very big price that either one of them or even both will be champion jockey in the future. And I mean, I suppose for racing, you almost would rather, sorry, Tom, that it was Holly, because it would do a huge amount for the exposure of the sport and showing that it is a sport where males and females can compete on a level playing field. And I hope that we're now getting to a point in time where it's no longer someone is being referred to as a talented female rider, but just they're being referred to as a fantastic jockey. And Holly Doyle is that in a nutshell. On a negative note, Josh, another story that's unfortunately been in the news recently has been the quite unbelievable kickback from some quarters to Rishi Prasad's recent interview with Josh Appiafi on diversity in racing and inclusion and trying to get more people from a BAME background into the industry. And for me, I find it quite saddening, really, because like whatever your views, surely encouraging more people to come into our fantastic sport has to be a good thing. And like I say, I felt Rishi's interview really got misconstrued in quite a lot of quarters, is in, I don't think he was saying racing wasn't inclusive. I don't think he was making any of those points. I think what he was saying was, can we do even more to encourage people from even greater backgrounds to come into the sport and be involved, which can only help. But then surely we need to look at the reasons why more people from a more ethnically diverse background don't want to come in or don't feel that it's an option to them. As in, like I say, I think what happened here was Rishi wasn't saying racing was the issue. What he was saying is, can racing do more to see why these people from these other backgrounds don't want to come within the sport? And like I say, I think that's good. That could be a fantastic thing. And when you saw some of the negative comments and the criticism to it, it actually quite saddened me, because it's not what racing's about. I do think racing is a very open, inviting industry. And like I say, I think we should be celebrating that and doing even more to increase the interest within it.
Absolutely. And for those that didn't agree with his comments, I really urge you to go and read. He did an interview yesterday, actually, in the Racing Post, and it was very honest and very in-depth about his thoughts. So if you do disagree with that, and look, you can read the column again and still disagree with it. That's not my position to say you can't, but I would definitely read that.
Rishi Prasad is a racing success story. He's someone who started his broadcasting career within racing and has done it all. You know, Wimbledon, the Masters, he's been around the world doing it, and it all started through racing. So again, he is a person that should be celebrated, and his views should be, it deserve the common courtesy of being listened to and respected, not criticised by people that quite frankly don't have any right to do that.
Why do you think there was the kickback? If you put yourself in the head, and I personally can't, and it wouldn't surprise me if you can't, but why do you think people are negative towards it?
Narrow-mindedness, 100%. You know, as in that I think there's often a view that people want to believe that all's right in my house. I don't criticise my house. And like I said, it wasn't a piece of criticism. It was a piece of questioning. Can we do even more? And can we be at the forefront of that? And I feel it was quite short-sighted, the response. And like I say, it almost smacked to me of people that actually hadn't listened to the full interview, hadn't read the piece in the Racing Post. They just saw the headline or the snippets that were taken from it and wanted to immediately jump down Rishi Prasad's throat without taking the time to fully understand what his comments were.
Well, racing can do more, and racing will do more, regardless of these negative comments. Let's move on to a big thing at the moment, and that's crowds are back at race courses. Great news, but the tier system has not been great for many race courses, put it that way.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, isn't it? It does seem that racing got a bit of a raw deal when it came down to the tiering system, and it's fantastic that the places that can, the Ludlows of this world, are going to be able to welcome 2,000 spectators back in. And that's something that should be celebrated. And
Cheltenham can have 2,000.
Yeah, which is
very exciting.
Could
you imagine if Cheltenham is allowed 2,000 spectators to come next March?
It's going to feel a bit of a lonely place, mind, isn't it? You know, as in...
not only that, but then we're going for...
it's going to be the golden ticket, isn't it? As in, you know, never mind Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I mean, this is going to be worth a fortune if you manage to get hold of one. I mean, hopefully you and I might be on that list.
We're going to have to hop a fence or dig a hole. I reckon if we dig the hole in we'll start now in November, that we might be able to hide it for next March.
From here?
Maybe not from here, but drive there, drive down the Cleve Hill from the opposite side to the grandstand and sneak in that way.
You look like you've got very soft hands. I worry it's me that's going to have to do all the digging.
I think I probably would be, actually.
But I mean, on a more serious matter, it is positive news. I think we've got to hope once this gets reviewed in mid-December and the tiering system gets reviewed then, that it does open it up, that more tracks can get people back on course. None more so than our local Warwick up the road. You know, it's a busy time of year for them. And I know 2,000 people through the gate would mean a massive amount to them.
Absolutely. I'm not going to criticise anyone. But we're recording this in Wellesbourne, it's in between a town and a village. That's probably underestimating it. It's a town, small town, and we are probably the best part of 20, 25 miles away from Coventry and Birmingham, yet somehow we're in the same bracket as them.
Yeah, as in,
This like, is like, Charlie, we're recording this at your place, and there's probably not another house in within a mile.
No, completely agree. I mean, look, we don't want to get political because it's not what we're about. It's about fun and racing, and there are far greater minds than ours that can't work it out. But it does seem a little nonsensical to me that somewhere like Warwick, that's in the middle of the fresh air, can't welcome 2,000 socially distanced spectators, but at the same time, you can probably drive somewhere and go to the cinema, you know, as in it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. But I've very much taken the view that I just kind of get on with each day because it seems to change rapidly. And yeah, sometimes I do struggle to work it all out. And racing, I feel, hasn't been hard done by because, of course, there's far greater problems in the world right now. But it does seem once we've opened it up, I think we kind of all felt once the lockdown was ended, it would mean that we could get spectators back on race courses across the board. And yet that hasn't happened. And I'd have thought for a lot of tracks, that's going to be disappointing news.
Thanks, Charlie.
Delighted to be joined on the line by our Irish racing expert, Andrew Blair. Why, Andrew, no pressure, but you've got to give us some winners over the Irish Sea. But first, let's talk about Gold Cup contender running.
Yeah, Manella Indo ran last Sunday there at Navan and was very impressive. It was good to see him out once again. We didn't learn too much more about him than we already knew, but he jumped around safe and sound and quickened up well to beat Brahma Bull, who's a grade three or listed horse for Willie Mullins. He's now won two on the trot this year. He's been campaigned a little bit more frequently than he has been as a novice hurdler or a novice chaser the last two seasons, which is great. And he's probably now in line to run in the Savills Chase at Leopardstown over Christmas, where he'll really put those Gold Cup credentials on the line.
Great to see Gordon getting some experience into him. You mentioned Willie Mullins then. He's exciting. Yeah?
Sorry, it's Henry de Bromhead trains him, not Gordon.
All right, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Just wanted to let you know.
I'll go from there. Great to see Henry getting some experience into him. You did mention Willie Mullins. He's had some exciting novice hurdlers run, especially some that finished pretty well in the champion bumper, just the 1-2.
Yeah, exactly. And it was good to see both of them back out. Fernie Hollow got the job done at Gorham Park. He settled very nicely and beat a very good horse in Bob Ollinger of Henry de Bromhead's, who I know an awful lot of people think very highly of, but he jumped well and got the job done well. Appreciated was down in Cork. It was a race he should have won, and he did win. Paul Townend was very cool on him. You'd have to have been impressed with the way he jumped, especially for his first start over hurdles. One would assume now he will be stepped up in trip to that 2.5 mile division and could take an awful lot of stopping going forward, maybe as a Ballymore contender. But good to see both of them get out and do the job very nicely.
Any other runners particularly to note?
Yeah, well, last weekend, Willie Mullins really started firing some of his big bullets. And we mentioned there that his two probably most promising novice hurdlers, and he had a few very good winners of beginners chases across the weekend. Energamine at Gorham Park was extremely impressive. Janadil at Nace on Saturday accounted for a very good field. And Black Bow showed something like what we thought he might be back when he was a bumper horse three seasons ago. His career unfortunately got sidetracked a little bit with injuries, but he seemed to be back to his best when beating Intucas at Navan on Sunday. So all three of them are probably horses to watch out for going forward, and probably will be leading the line for Willie Mullins in the 2 mile and 2.5 mile novice chase division. And you have to remember, he still has both Monkfish and the Big Getaway to come out.
It's a ridiculous amount of talent that he's got. Let's talk about this weekend now. A stellar card at Fairy House on Sunday, and we'll start in the juvenile hurdle. Quixilios going for Gordon, the Triumph Hurdle favourite. What are we expecting from him now?
Well, we're expecting to see him run very well, I assume, if he does take up this engagement. He was very impressive at Down Royal when he accounted for a field that he really should have accounted for, let's be honest. But he did it extremely nicely, and he's another one of these young Cheveley Park horses for Gordon Elliott that the sky's the limit at the moment. It'll be interesting to see, as I say, whether he does take up the engagement. I know they're very Sweet on a horse called Zana here as well, who runs in the Noel and Valerie Moran silks. Noel and Valerie Moran have pumped an awful lot of money into the game recently, as some people will know, with some expensive point-to-point recruits. This horse did it very nicely at Ballinrobe on his maiden hurdle debut. So it'll be interesting to see whether Gordon lines the two up against each other. I would assume probably only one of the two will run, and whichever one it is will probably take an awful lot of stopping.
You mentioned these Cheveley Park horses are with Gordon, and in the Royal Bond, the race after, Ballet Adam isn't favourite. Now, I know Jamie Codd thought this horse was potentially the best horse, best young horse he's ever sat on. Bear in mind, he rode Anvar Allen to champion bumper victory. And it's well coveted that this horse is top class. He's second favourite to She Wears It Well, who he does give £7 to. She's trained by Willie Mullins. For those that haven't heard of her, how good could she be? And does 6-4 represent her ability?
Yeah, I think they think she's a real fine mare. It's obviously very early on in her career, but she's 3 from 3 and she couldn't have been more impressive those three times. And I remember after Tipperary, they were eulogising about her, really, that she almost might be the most hurdler her in the yard. And considering Fernie Hollow and Appreciated are both in the same stable, you'd have to take notice of when they say those sort of comments about a mare like this. They obviously hold her in really high regard. And that £7 swing, as I'm sure we'll talk about later on with Honeysuckle, is massive in these races with really good mares. We saw Annie Power back in the day take advantage of that £7 mare's allowance to win a champion hurdle. So it will be very interesting. But personally, I just can't get away from Bally Adam. He's now... He's, as you say, he was second favourite, but he did it so impressively at Down Royal. You couldn't have been happier with him. He beat a decent horse in Colonel Mustard that day at Lorna Fowler's. And I just believe with the way they're talking about him, it's very hard to get away from it. They're talking about him in the same light as Envoy Len. We all know how good Envoy Len is. So it is very hard to get away from Bally Adam for the Royal Bond on Sunday.
It looks like Cheevy Park are having it right off on Sunday. In the Drimmore, they've got Envoy Len, the best horse in training, in my opinion. He's 1-3. No stone will be turned with him. Easy Work, 9-2. Andy Dufresne, also trained by Gordon Elliott, 7-1. Will all three turn up?
I'd say very unlikely, unfortunately. I'd love, for the race's perspective, for the three to turn up. I'd say the most likely situation here is that Gordon runs one of the other horses against Envoy Len. I suspect he'll be anxious to give Envoy Len some sort of a race, and with either Easy Work or Andy Dufresne, who are potentially proper grade one horses in their own right, it might get Envoy Len off the bridle, and he may have to learn a bit more than he had to at Down Royal, where he got a bit of a solo out in front. It's one of those ones, though, Josh, with Envoy Len. Whenever he runs, you're almost just keeping your fingers crossed that everything goes to plan. This is a really seriously good horse. He's fallen, like an awful lot of people have fallen in love with him now over his novice hurdle career, his bumper career, and now going chasing. And you just want that career to keep going in an upward trajectory as it is. And hopefully he can do so by winning the Drinmore on Sunday.
He's so, so exciting. And weirdly enough, it seems like we've got two absolute gems in Shishkin and Envoy Allen. We mentioned Shishkin earlier on the podcast. Let's talk about the Hat and Grace hurdle, arguably the feature on the Sunday. Honeysuckle makes her seasonal reappearance. She's 4-7 to do so. It's short enough. But if you're looking at the field, Saldier, Beacon Edge, Fury Road, a potential stayers hurdle candidate, Ronald Pump. I am going to go to Fury Road before we talk about Honeysuckle. I know this is over 2.5 miles, but could he serve it up to her?
Yeah, I think if he runs, he'd have a very good chance. I wouldn't be sure whether he'll be declared, because he did run only a couple of weeks ago at Punchestown. Now, he had a very easy time of things then, so it would be interesting to see how he's campaigned. I'd be a little bit dubious at 2.5 miles for Fury Road. He did look like he needed every step of the way of 3 miles last year. And Honeysuckle is a mare with an awful lot of boot. She mightn't be seen to greatest effect at 2 miles, but she's a speedy horse for 2.5 miles. And she certainly looks like she has the edge on an awful lot of this field, especially given the fact she's receiving £7.
Well, she beat Bacardi's and Apple's Jade in the race last year. Do you think she's going to go in and make it two in a row?
I would say there's every likelihood. That being said, I think the race has potentially got more depth than it did have last year. Obviously, Bacardi's and Apple's Jade. Apple's Jade was maybe a little bit of a spent force. And I remember Penn Hill didn't run up to market expectations that day either. You've got some really, really promising young horses in this. Beacon Edge for No Mead is a big improver. French Dynamite for Mouse Morris is a horse liked by many. And also Ronald Pump, who was second in the Stayers Hurdle last year to Lisnagar Oscar. And he ran a super race that day under Brian Cooper. He was quite unlucky to fall on his reappearance in the Liz Mullen Hurdle at the last for Keith Donoghue. He just slithered on landing at the back of it. He certainly would have placed that day in my eyes. And he might be one to keep on side as a horse that might stay on into a place. I'm sure he'll be ridden cold, as he often is, and will be ridden to pick up the pieces. And maybe if there is a shotgun, he might be the one to provide it.
Before we finish, please, can you give us one horse to look out for this week?
Yeah, looking at Fairy House on Sunday, it's a brilliant card even away from the main Grade 1 races, and a horse I'd certainly be keeping the right side of in the Porterstown Handicap Chase. It's a 3 mile, 5 furlong handicap chase. Is a horse called Captain CJ for Dermot McLaughlin. He was only a length and a half behind Manella Indo in a beginner's chase last year before winning the Grade 2 10-up novice chase at Navan. If his jumping is sorted out, he didn't jump particularly well on his reappearance at Limerick over a trip short of his best, but he's in here off a mark of 143. I think that is exploitable. He loves Fairy House, and I'd be surprised if he wasn't near the frame.
Great stuff. And before you do go, we want one for the Ladbroke Trophy as well. Who do you fancy, Andrew?
I'd be sticking with the conditional. He did me a good turn at Cheltenham last year in the Ultima Handicap Chase. I remember him being trained by Martin Hassett in Ireland when he was a good, promising young horse. And hopefully David Bridgewater will have him primed for the big day on Saturday.
Great to hear. Best of luck, Andrew, and have a good week.
Cheers, Josh.